Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And I just want to let everyone know that listens to the archives that I have been looking to get some guests on the program. Stephen Pigeon is scheduled for tomorrow, the 27th, and Betsy Lewis is scheduled for Thursday. I have a lot of messages out to potential guests in January, so see how that goes. It seems like I always get pushed back to the Meyer material anyway, which isn't a problem. It's just such a tremendous amount of information. I think I'm going to do a little bit of an overview this afternoon. First of all, I was looking at a map of Switzerland, and I didn't realize how close, that Bulak and Hinterschmidruti are. They're both in northern Switzerland, actually. And so is Zurich. Bulak is where Billy grew up. And about 1945, he started to get these telepathic messages. But even before that, when he was 4 years old, growing up in Niederfallach/Bulak, which is a municipality in Switzerland in the canton of Zurich and belongs to what they call the Glad Valley. At about 3 a.m. one morning, he woke up and crawled out a low window, and sat down on a bench outside and looked up at a beautiful starry sky. And he heard a voice in his head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And a short time later, words seemed to form on Billy's lips, which said, "Since ancient times, you've lived among the stars." And I've often speculated that these words formed on his lips as a result of past life influence in some way. About this time, Billy knew who he was and what his mission on the earth was. And he got these impulses, which he later realized were from what they call the universal storage banks. There are storage banks of information for our planet, for our solar system, and for our universe. So here's Billy it's a warm night in May. It's 3 a.m. and he's looking up at the beautiful starry sky, and he's literally getting information. And one of the things that's written in this article, it's called How It All Began. I suggest you take a look at that. It says, "I recognize that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, the light of true love remained invisible and for all great time." And the Meyer material has some things to say about love. And we probably should pay attention to that. And there's a great article on the Future of Mankind site called True Love Has Its Basis in Reality, Not in Belief. And we all look at a love that's really romantic. We seem to be drawn to a love that's based on stimulation, which is a false love. That real love is a very stable thing. And Billy explains that love is essential for all evolution and all life. And he says that without love, nothing can be created. And no transformation can occur. Love is also important for all changes that are supposed to take place. And Billy's talking about the highest form of wisdom, creational love. And this is actually a love that's stable. It's a love that's based on what they call a fine sensitive feeling. It's a love based on reverence. And that's what Billy's experiencing at this young age. He's looking up at a beautiful starry night, and he's intuitively understanding that there's this gigantic universal intelligence and that it's radiating love. And this radiating love is not through the visible light, but through an invisible manifestation. And Billy said, at that very young age, he said that everything which exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and true love of that mighty universal consciousness called the creation. So the Meyer material explains that there really isn't a God in the way the religions teach. There isn't a heavenly father. There's a universal consciousness that's, it's neither good nor evil. It radiates love, which we think of as good, but this is a creational natural law. It created our universe, and it created certain laws associated with our universe, the first of which is a wisdom-conditioned love, not a love based on romantic notions or sex or stimulation, but a love that's based on reverence and awe and respect. The second creational natural law that this universal consciousness made, or one of the other very important ones, is a law of harmony. And this means that we should have a neutral, positive way of thinking. In other words, not really positive and not really negative. And that's one of the problems with romantic love, is it is very positive, very, very positive, which often leads to anger and all sorts of problems. A third creational law is the law of evolutive striving. Everything in nature has to strive to stay alive. Striving is your real source of happiness. It's you learn this later. It's something I'm learning at this late point in my life, that all happiness is really based around your evolutive striving, your work. And your work includes not only your day job, but cleaning up around your house and taking care of your body and your family and your pets and your hobbies and all these sorts of things. The more you focus on evolution, the more you focus on striving, the greater your happiness will be. The other, if we could put a fourth creational natural law, we could say the law of reincarnation. And what that tells us, the law of reincarnation says that everything dies and everything is born again, all life. So, for example, the human spirit is your permanent part of the you. It's your spiritual consciousness. So at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, the spirit form, the Geist form as it's called in the German, comes into the fetus, and it brings with it a new material consciousness, a personality, a conscious mind, a subconscious mind. And it sends its energies throughout the whole body, and it causes the heart to beat. If you've ever had a loved one, like a loved pet, when you see the spirit form leave, the eyes will dim immediately, and you'll know that that death has occurred. The spirit form resides in the area of our brain associated with sight. It's this little area called the superior colliculus. And the light from that spirit form, it's associated with our changes in gaze. And you will utilize the superior colliculus when your eyes move from one target to the next to the next. And it's that spirit form that is your spiritual consciousness. It's the part of you that will last forever. And the spirit form requires something called the material consciousness to live. And I know this sounds real metaphysical and technical, but it's really not so hard to understand. You just have to be exposed to it quite a good bit. Your spirit form is invulnerable. It cannot be harmed by anything in the material realm. Your spirit form is neutral, positive, just like the universal consciousness. And your spirit form will never think in a positive or a negative way. It'll always be neutral, positive. It's always in sync with the universal consciousness. The key to happiness, according to this Meyer information, is training your material consciousness to think in a neutral, positive way. Now, let me read something from the book called The Might of Thoughts that talks about that. If the thoughts are strong, pure, neutral, positive, equalized, healthy, and happy, as well as of a free and loving form, then vitality and resistance against everything negative and destructive are built up by means of their might. Protected thereby is also the body, which as a gentle and plastic instrument immediately reacts to the kind of thoughts which the human being tends and nurtures. This is another reason why the human being should not allow habitual thinking to take the upper hand too much, because in very many regards this leads to extremely negative effects. One's thinking should therefore not be habitual, rather always constructive and thereby always renewing and progressive, so that the might of the thoughts is able to make real all that which is useful and worth striving for the human being and for his or her consciousness and psyche, as well as for his or her life and entire circumstances of life. So you should have neutral, positive thinking. You shouldn't let yourself fall into habits in your thinking. You probably have some bad habits. We all got bad habits. And we stay away from them for a long time, and then we sometimes fall back into them. That habitual thinking, extremely unproductive. So we need to nurture healthy thinking. Now, Billy, at this age in his life, he's maybe before 5 years old. He hasn't met at all with Thoth yet, but he's already learning good thoughts. He's already thinking about the universe and about the universal consciousness, and he's already thinking about what true love really is. Let me read a little section from the Meyer writings here. It says, through this, I also learned to separate the wheat from the chaff and to look for the truth where it is basically to be found, namely in one's own inner and innermost, as well as in one's own intellect, in one's own reason, in one's own thoughts. This is why it's so important to be an independent thinker. Do not let even Billy Meyer or anyone else make up your mind. You follow your own thoughts and think things through for yourself, because that's the only way you can have any kind of real evolution. And this will lead you to the recognition and application of self-responsibility. And you'll start to learn how to fulfill your responsibility and towards your fellow human beings, to other plants and other animals. So, Billy had a kind of a pastor growing up, a pastor. His name was Rudolph Zimmerman. And Pastor Rudolph Zimmerman helped Billy. Billy went through some very difficult times when he was growing up because his father, of course, didn't understand why Billy was missing school. And neither did anyone, for that matter. Billy was quite alone in this sense. He had to experience these sightings and this incredible learning all by himself. And this is part of the bit of truth related to the Meyer material. And you'll learn this as you have to deal with a certain amount of independence. You know, well, that's one of the great lessons, is your independence. And the Meyer material is not for everybody, because it requires independence. Independence in your thinking, independence in your life, and it can lead you to happiness, but it requires a lot of work. Billy's first sighting, let's talk about that. Billy had this unknown desire, which compelled him to look high above the eastern horizon. And this is, again, he's still very young, still very much in Block, Switzerland. He felt this strange desire, and he was looking up this beautiful azure blue sky. It was a warm and beautiful summer morning. And he was looking at the sky, looking 10 or 15 minutes come by, and then he saw this tremendous silver flash, like a giant metallic arrow. That's something that appeared near the church steeple. It was a giant 200 to 300 meter disc, and it appeared to the west over the Horagan Forest, Horagan, Horagan. And Billy's father, I think, saw this disc as well. It was shortly after that that Billy started to get his telepathic messages from Svoth. And Billy was also somewhat of a scapegoat in the village at this time, and he was punished very severely by his father. And then sometimes young Billy could neither sit nor stand. But then finally, one day, after one of these telepathic meetings, out of the sky came this silvery pear-shaped craft, which landed nearby young Edward Albert Meyer, and he was kind of pulled by some kind of technology into the craft. And it was very interesting, and Svoth spoke to Billy in the dialect of his own village. And Svoth told Billy that someday Billy would become a great teacher himself. And Svoth also brought his ship up some 70,000 meters into the air. And at this very young age, Billy was already up to the development of a 35-year-old man. And Svoth wanted to waken up some of the abilities that young Edward had had in previous lives. And we've talked about the previous lives of Edward Albert Meyer on the show in some detail. Billy had been many, many influential people on the earth. His spirit form has incarnated as many influential people on the earth. And it's very ancient. And it has been a great teacher in the ancient past for these extraterrestrials that Billy has had contact with now. So anyway, Svoth put this device on Billy's head. It transmitted a huge amount of knowledge to Billy. And Billy felt these unusual forces penetrating his mind. And suddenly, Billy knew events that would take place in the future. Svoth removed the strange instrument, and these prophetic abilities were now awakened in Billy. And Svoth explained that certain abilities were now awakened with him because of that instrument. And these abilities had been developed by Billy in previous lives. And these being able to look into the future would help him during this lifetime. So this first contact with Svoth occurred on a Saturday at about 12:10 p.m. on February 3rd, 1945. And that's when young Billy first met this man of nearly 1,000 years old, Svoth. Now, a few things about Billy. His real name is Edward, which means guardian of the treasure. He's known by people all over the world as Billy, and he's kind of established himself in the background because the people of the earth create for themselves idols, and Billy was warned about this. He was told to focus on his writings, and Billy's done an incredible amount of writing. He's written over 40 books. He's written over 2,000 contact reports. It's just phenomenal. And it's not like it's light reading. You can take one of these books of Billy's And like the Might of Thoughts, I've read three times, just barely beginning to understand it. The Psyche is probably one of the most technical books I've ever read. It's incredible. The Way to Live, I'm going back through for the second time and just barely starting to scratch the surface. Well, here's an article I want to read a little bit to you. It's called A Word to Mankind. And it says, as never before in the long history of Earth and its people, wars, and crimes, as well as its manifold brutalities prevail, which constantly increase in step with the overpopulation. Let me throw something in here. This year, I've really seen something I've called the Earth the planet of unnecessary death. And we're going to see that more and more as the overpopulation increases and our lives become more pressured and it becomes more and more difficult to help the animals and the people around us. And you'll see how this gigantic human population will start to destroy more and more the natural world and the animals all around. Let me continue it. Here it says, the old venerable relationships between planet and man have changed drastically for the worse, especially since the middle of the 19th century, and the trend is continued noticeably. Not only has mankind sunk into the abyss of boundless depravity. Wow. Now, there's something that's very true, and I think we're all guilty of that. There is, you have boundless depravity at your fingertips. One of the things that you can do on the internet anytime is watch depravity, and it manifests in very many ways. Not something I want to emphasize, but remember, your only happiness comes from striving, and you have no happiness in depravity, only stimulation. Let me continue here, but it also has brought this decay to the planet in the entire animal world and nature as a whole. All governments and those responsible and the majority of the population have become the keepers of evil. While they talk of peace and better quality of life as well as better interpersonal relationships, aid for the hungry, environmental protection, and many other good things, the governments and responsible will secretly rearm and prepare deadly weapons in order to destroy entire nations. We have a new administration coming in. The old administration has sold like $110 billion of arms to Saudi Arabia. So the Middle East is primed for war now, thanks to us. So this is just one of Billy's writings. Sloth told Billy to stay focused on his writings, to perform his mission in the background, performing his mission in written form. And the spiritual teaching is designed to awaken us, humanity, out of our sleep. And the teaching of the creational truth will be a worldwide movement that will bring peace, love, and freedom to the human beings of the earth. Now, this is going to take some time to do it. But one of the things to remember is that we all are in what's called a we form, and even your correct thinking positively affects other people subconsciously. Your incorrect thinking also negatively affects people subconsciously. So the responsibility for our thinking is pretty huge. Let me continue here in the Might of Thoughts on page 150. It says, as long as the human being nurtures unclean, pessimistic, wrong, sick, bad, and negative thoughts and his or her feelings, which in turn correspondingly form the psyche from which one's life and body are then influenced, and this will form in equal manner. If the thoughts from one's own consciousness are depraved, then inevitably also one's life and body are depraved. It's funny that we just saw that section on depravity. Because of the might of the thoughts allow no possibility other than that which the thoughts themselves create. In fact, it is the thoughts which are the wellspring of one's actions, one's life, and its fulfillment. If the wellspring is bad and negative, then that is also the case with the actions which emerge from it, with one's life and all factors associated. However, if the wellspring is pure, good, and positive, then also one's actions, one life, and all circumstances connected with it form accordingly. There's the incredible responsibility. That is an incredible responsibility, and that is our own thoughts. Eventually, the Meyer material says all this teaching will form a worldwide movement. Let's hope so, because we need it. Sfaf taught Billy something called spiritual telepathy, which enabled Edward Albert Meyer to receive information from the spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasata. So let me talk quickly about all these different levels of evolution that we go through. There are 7 evolutionary steps for human beings. And the first one is kind of a primitive state. The second state is rational life. And then the third state is what you might call intelligent life. We're not even there yet. We're mostly in the second stage. And then the fourth stage is real life, and that's incredible. I mean, that's where we create ships that can jump across from one star system to another, and with almost no time passing, we can create biological intelligence, which can talk to us and have telepathy and is self-aware. And then we have something called life and creational wisdom. And I've tried to keep these terms as close to what the Meyer material calls it. And that's where, you know, you have these kings of wisdom, these Ishwishes. And then the next stage is kind of half spiritual, half physical. And then the final stage are the spiritual planes. And there are 7 spiritual planes that our spirit form evolves upward in. And the 7 spiritual planes, they start with Arahat Athrasata, according to Meyer information. I can't prove any of this, but Sada. And Billy, as a young boy, was shown how to communicate with this spiritual plane by Sfaf. And this is something called spiritual telepathy. So Billy started at a very young age to get this spiritual telepathy from Arahat Athrasata. It takes us about 2.9 billion years to get through this stage. And eventually we merge back with the universal consciousness after that. So Billy was told that many people would turn against him, that people would try to kill him, that his own wife would call him a hoaxer. And he was told about the great atomic destruction that would come to Hiroshima and Nagasaki and about all these future events. And Sfaf continued to teach Billy until about 1953 or so. And let me quickly talk about the Meyer spirit form and its 7 major prophet incarnations. There are other, this spirit form has incarnated as other people. And it's the whole universal prophet study, which I'm not sure if we're going to go over today, but we'll see how it goes. Henoch, Enoch, as we call him, Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and Billy Meyer. These are 7 spirit forms that have incarnated over the past 13,000 years. And according to the Meyer information, they taught consistent material all the way through, but it's our religions that have changed things over the years. Now, this is, I guess, the last incarnation on Earth of this spirit form. I would not say that emphatically, but I think that's what I remember them teaching. Another side note is the Plarion left the Earth as a group in 1995. Billy still gets contacts and they still visit, but in 1995 they left. Now the Plarion, they reside some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. They're in a different space-time configuration between 75 and 86. There were at least three major extraterrestrial bases on the Earth. One was in Switzerland, had been here for about three centuries. One was in Asia, and one was in North America. And there were something like 12 different races of extraterrestrial humans on the Earth at that time, 2,862 of them. But in 1995, they left the Earth. They wouldn't tell us why. We had people here from the Lyrian constellation, from the Vagan star system, from, I think, the Cirrus system, from neighboring star systems. I guess you could say the Cirrus system is a neighboring star system. There were also some other extraterrestrials on the Earth. The Hyperboreans had a base in Mount Shasta that actually was kind of like a small city. There was a group of blonde-haired people that lived in Mount Shasta for a while. They had been here for hundreds of thousands of years. You could almost call them Earth people at this point. They didn't evolve on the Earth, but they came here hundreds of thousands of years ago. And sometimes you can see their golden-colored spacecrafts will leave the eastern side of Mount Shasta. Sometimes they would actually go down into local villages thereby and interact with Earth humans, but not very often. They had kind of beam weapons that would sometimes, they would use just to stun Earth peoples if they got too close. Hyperborea, these Hyperboreans as they're called, in the ancient past, hundreds of thousands of years ago, lived up around the North Pole. And the North Pole region of the Earth was very beautiful during ancient times, and they had all kinds of trees up there and fruits, palm trees, and it was like 70 degrees all the time. It was a wonderful place. It was very green. I don't know how this is possible, but the Earth was fundamentally different back then in some way. Now, there was a great war between Atlantis and Lemuria. A guy named Eris the Barbarian, he came from Beta Centauri and he took over Hyperborea. His son went into India and nearby regions. His son was named Arian. And this was kind of the precursor to the great war between Atlantis and Lemuria. And around 13,000 years ago, the Lemurians took an asteroid from our asteroid belt and they attached a drive system to it and slammed it into the Earth. And that just about wiped out all of the Earth. It also shifted our axis on an angle and changed our climate. And it took many centuries for the Earth to recover from this pole shift and from this asteroid strike. So Florida was actually located in that area. And again, the forces of Eris conquered Hyperborea in ancient times. Now, you can read about this in Contact Report 70 to a degree. Now, there's actually two Atlantises that are talked about in the Meyer material. One from about 389,000 years ago. One from about 13,000 years ago. I don't know the whole story. A lot of the original Atlantis information has not been translated. The second Atlantis I do have information on, and we've talked about that at length before, to cover it again in sometime in the future. But the Hyperboreans, again, had been on the Earth for about 180,000 to 190,000 years. After Eris had conquered Hyperborea, sometime after that, these Hyperboreans must have gone to California, to what we call California now, and they hid away in Mount Shasta, kind of stayed there. Somehow these Hyperboreans are related to the current white human race. And there was a great, what they call a king of wisdom, that came from these Hyperboreans, who talked with a man named Henoch, who is the guy that commissioned Noah to build his ark. And according to Meyer material, Noah did not actually, he had help building the ark, let's just say that. And when the ark landed, none of the four-legged animals could have gotten off of the very tip of a mountain. They didn't land at the tip of Mount Ararat during this flood that occurred. And this flood was quite a long time ago. And as I was saying, Hyperborea was a very beautiful area. Noah in ancient times, I was talking about Noah, his actually named Noah Codnesser. He was about 10 meters. He was about 3 meters and 10 centimeters tall. That makes him over 10 feet tall. Noah was a giant by our standards. His head would have been as tall as the rim of a basketball court. And he was given a lot of wisdom by this teacher, Henoch, who Henoch, we know, was one of the former personalities of Edward Albert Meyer. And maybe we'll get back to that again tonight. The ark was built around 100,000 years ago, calculated back from today. There has been more than one great flood. So the events associated with the ark took about 100, they took place about 100,000 years ago. The large four-footed animals, like I said, could have never gotten down from the peak of Mount Ararat. So the ark didn't land on the peak. What caused this flood? It didn't occur in 4,000 years ago, but there was floods that would occur when this destroyer comet would come past the Earth. And the destroyer, it goes near Earth's orbit, and when it did, it's no longer in our solar system. But when it did, it came back at a kind of a regular interval and disturbs the Earth's rotation, and it disturbs its revolution around the sun, and it triggers immense earthquake, volcanic eruptions, storms. And from this whole event, we get this biblical flood, which occurred about 100,000 years ago. The builder of the ark, to a degree, was a man named Noah Codnesser. And he had contact with an extraterrestrial who had a strange name that began with a Z, Zebulon. And a weirder name, the name means something about he who brings the hosts of the heavens. Anyway, this extraterrestrial explained to Noah Codnesser the danger of this comet coming in again. And he advised him to build this ark. And he did the work in cooperative work with his family. He didn't do it all himself. So they were saved from this humongous deluge. His family, many animals, they brought many animals. So over time, the name Noah Codnesser was altered little by little. And finally, we only have the name Noah. And instead of Noah talking to an extraterrestrial over time, the story of him talking directly with God came about. And this is according to the Meyer information anyway. And this is talked about in Contact Report 248, which I will throw in the chat room. And I know the Meyer material is always so controversial. So let me see if I can put it in the chat room. You guys can press that link. You can read the story for yourselves. Another extraterrestrial group that was here before 1995, again, I think they're gone, is the Hasters. The Hasters were pretty close to our own evolution. You know, we were talking about these seven steps of evolution. Well, the Hasters were pretty close to us, and they were brought here by the Pleiar. And the Hasters were in a galaxy hundreds of millions of light years away, like 483 million light years. They were in another galaxy, and the Pleiarian built them a base underneath the North Atlantic. And the Hasters were here to study the Earth people. Let me read a section here in the Meyer information. It says, just a few years ago, we entered into connection with the highly sophisticated inhabitants of the planet Haster, who have progressed so far in their overall development, as it will be for the Earth people in approximately 1120 years. With ethically and very highly distinctive lifestyles, the inhabitants of Haster are very peaceful and loving, and besides this, they live in the same time level as the solar system. So let me dive into something, again, that'll twist your mind into a pretzel. The Pleiarian are in a different space-time configuration than us. So let me try to explain this. We have something called the Lyra-Vega system, okay? In our space-time configuration, same as the Sol system, there were a group of Lyrians that visited the Earth about 389,000 years ago. Now, they weren't from our Lyra-Vega system. They were from what you might call a duplicate Lyra-Vega system in a different space-time configuration. So there's a Pleiarian star system as well. It's in a different space-time configuration than ours. I never liked the fact that this was true. I think this makes things very difficult to understand. But it also is in kind of a wondrous thing. If you think about the incredible expanse of the universe. So these Hasters are from our time point, our dimension, so to speak. And they were brought here by the Pleiarian to study us. They're very peaceful and loving. Again, they live in our time's level. Because the Haster inhabitants, they're very interested in life forms and the remote vastness of the universe. They don't have the technology to get here. The Pleiarian brought them here. In what's called the Great Spacer. Now, the Great Spacer is the Pleiarian mothership, and Billy got a ride in the Pleiarian mothership. And I'm thinking that was in the late 70s. And his third extraterrestrial contact was a woman named Semyase. Semyase took him out to the Great Mothership, which at that time was near Jupiter. And her little beam ship flew into this mothership. There's a gigantic opening that the ship flew through. It landed. And one of the most interesting scenes in that whole story in Contact Report 31 is talked about when Billy and Semyase were walking through the mothership, and there's this one gigantic garden in there with trees and all kinds of life forms. And I thought that was kind of wondrous. That inside this ship, they brought this whole natural area. My understanding was it went on forever. This mothership is gigantic. It's as tall as the tallest mountain on Earth, and it's like 10 miles wide. And they can take that thing and jump from star system to star system. So the Hasters were brought here in the Great Spacer. The Pleiarian built their station, which is in the North Sea. And the Hasters can stand to be around Earth people for 17 hours. Okay, this is something you may not have heard before, but according to Meyer information, the higher you get in this evolutionary level, the harder it is for you to stay around human beings of lower evolution. You start to be able to sense their thoughts, which are real unstable and real primitive. And that becomes very, very difficult for people of a higher evolution. And the Pleiaren couldn't have open contact with us without some kind of technology. They have a technology that allows us them to be in our presence for about a half an hour. So since these Hasters were closer to our level of evolution, they can stay around us a longer time. Again, they're gone. All the bases, according to my information, all the bases of all these extraterrestrials were evacuated in 1995 because of something. I don't know why. I still don't have that information. My understanding is in the Milky Way, there are about 7.5 million solar systems that are habitable for human beings. And I think there are about 2.6 million human civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy that are highly evolved. And people, human beings, range from 40 feet tall to about 16 inches tall. So there's a huge variation on the Earth, in the galaxy, of all these different kinds of people. Now, there again, the superintelligence, which created all these people and created this gigantic universe, is called the Creational Universal Consciousness by the Meyer information. It's this immense pure spirit energy that creates human spirit forms as a part of its own evolution. Now, you all have a spirit form. Again, I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the show. It's called the Geist form in the German. It comes into our bodies at about 21 days. When we're 21 days old, when we're in our mother's womb. And it brings life to the whole body. And it brings with it a new personality, a new consciousness. In the spirit form is the essence of all your previous lives, everything that you learned in your previous life, the essence of it is stored in your spirit form, and it's stored in a neutral, positive fashion. Your spirit form contains the love, the logic, the discernment that you in your previous material consciousnesses, all those things that you learned and evolved into are stored in your spirit form. So your spirit form, it isn't so aware of its surroundings as the material consciousness is. It's mostly focused on absorbing this evolutive knowledge. That's its purpose. It's not so much conscious of its surroundings as it needs a material consciousness. The spirit form to evolve, it needs a material consciousness. So we have the spiritual consciousness and the material consciousness. The psyche controls the thoughts and feelings of the material consciousness. The gemut of the spirit form controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness, the gemut, is kind of connected to creation always, in a way. And love is something that really has to come from the spiritual consciousness, true love. You see, the Meyer material puts it this way: the incredible splendor of nature is nothing but the love of creation expressed visibly. So this super intelligence, which is in the background, which is really neutral, it expresses its love quietly with no sound. It expresses its love through the incredible beauty, the incredible splendor of nature. So if you'll go out and try to spend some time in nature, you can, if you're open, and you have to be open to experience this, you can start to sense this radiating love. And the individual should therefore be aware that the love of creation is everywhere. Because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. And we only exist through the love of creation. And we carry this love within ourselves. All of nature, again, in its indescribable splendor, is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. Now again, silently, visibly expressed. The love, the underlying wondrous motivation of this superintelligence is expressed in the beautiful flowing mountainsides, in the rolling green hills, in the forests, in the lakes, in the rivers. There's this beautiful passage, I think it's in the Goblet of Truth. It's called What the Truth Knows to Say. And it says something to the effect that rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. And many of these creatures, they are aware of each other. And they are connected by these psychic vibrations. So again, if you're sensitive, you can maybe pick up on these psychic vibrations. And they connect creatures, and if you see the birds as they turn, change direction on a dime, you can see the connection between all of nature. You see, nature is called as one. It says the universal consciousness, the creation, it has a oneness to it. And by nature, I mean things in the natural world that do not associate with civilization, like mountains, trees, animals, rivers. The creation is called Schöpfung in the German. And the German word for splendor is Pracht. Splendor can mean a great, impressive beauty. You see, and that's what's so bad about the overpopulation, is we live in artificial cities. And we do not feel that underlying radiating splendor, that incredible splendor of this superintelligence. So what do we reflect? We reflect the distress that's found in the cities, the overcrowding. And that's why our music now is very mechanical sounding. It will even damage your consciousness, I think, to listen to some of the music that's out now. It's the expression of our insanity. Let me continue here. It says, each smallest plant, each ever so tiny animal is created in love by creation. Each creation existing according to the same law of love. All life is in the absolute perfection that it should be through the love of creation. There is a perfection through creation. Creation isn't perfect, though. Creation does have imperfection. But you see, creation is evolving. And that's one of the reasons, the fundamental difference between what's become our religions, our traditional religions, and that they say there is a perfect God that's omnipotent, all-powerful, and immutable. The Meyer material says there is a superintelligence which has created all things, but that it's evolving to higher levels, and that it creates spirit forms that live many millions of years of lifetimes. were 40 to 60 million years in those first five evolutionary steps that I talked about. 40 to 60 million years, part of which time is spent in the physical life, and part of the other time is spent in the spirit realm, where the spirit form processes all of the information associated with the previous material life. Anyway, I hope that this information was helpful to you. We'll be back on the 27th with Stephen Pigeon. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. Please Google Ohio Exopolitics. You'll see the website exopoliticsohio.us, where some of this information is stored, so you can read it for yourself. You can click the links, which go to thefutureofmankind.com. In any case, have a good day. This is Ohio Exopolitics, and I'm your host, Mark Snyder.